Okay, good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to our session this morning. And we're going to go ahead and talk about this Microsoft Cloud OS, and specifically the integration of the Windows Azure Pack with System Center and Windows Server 2012 R2. And I'll be co-presenting with Nagander and the entire system, or members from the System Center team, and then myself from the Azure team. And we'll talk about this joint effort that we have to provide this solution. Fundamentally, this is about building out our multi-cloud solution. We're taking a lot of the learnings that we've gained from running our data center in Windows Azure and bringing those learnings to the on-premise cloud deployments inside the enterprise and to our hosting service providers to build out the cloud platforms there, and partnering with the infrastructure that we built up with Windows Server and System Center to provide these world-class cloud services. This is kind of a transformation of the data center to enable a set of modern application workloads, unlock data insights, and empower people-centric IT. As part of this release, we're bringing a set of consistent cloud services across our clouds, from not only Azure to on-premise and service providers. That includes a new offering for high-density website hosting. Hopefully, many of you are aware that we have a new offer in Azure for doing high-density website hosting. This is where we have elastic websites. This isn't just standard IIS hosting. This is a new web PaaS that we run in Azure for how to deploy a website that you can scale elastically. And we can run those websites at very high densities, optimizing the cost in our data centers to run that service. This is a modern PaaS that supports many open source frameworks, including ASP.NET, Node.js, PHP, among others. It also has very deep integration with developer tools. So it's a very rich web platform. It's one that we run 24/7 in Azure. That technology stack is being made available as part of the Azure Pack. We're also bringing Service Bus, which is used in Azure for building modern web applications, which is a reliable messaging platform to deliver messages between tiers of an application in the cloud. Along with that, we're standardizing the IaaS self-service experience between Azure and what we can deliver on-premise and in hosting service providers for a consistent IaaS experience and a set of gallery items that'll be consistent. That is also elastic and scalable with the new virtual machine role, which we'll get into some detail. And then we actually provide also, in addition to the actual workloads from website, service bus, and IaaS for virtual machines, we're providing a consistent management stack. Now that stack does include a UI. We actually provide two UIs, and we'll get into this in some detail. We have an experience that's targeted at the consumers of the cloud. This would be the portal that we run in Azure for our consumers that come to Azure to get cloud services from Microsoft. So that we think of as a consumer portal. It's how does a consumer get access to the resources running in your data center. We make that available to our hosting service providers and to enterprise customers as well. We also provide a provider portal, a service provider portal for how you operate the set of multi-tenanted and shared services you run in your data center and manage the amount of capacity and resources that customers can actually get access to. Not only is it a UI framework, but it's also an API, a REST API. One of the things that we need to ensure is, as part of this effort, is we have a consistent platform for our application developers and our tools so that they can go to the cloud platform, Microsoft's Cloud OS solution, and have a consistent way to provision and manage and consume those resources, even at the API level and at the PowerShell level from an automation standpoint. So we bring the Azure REST API for managing the set of services you can consume in Azure. We bring that down for deployment on top of Windows Server and System Center to provide a consistent REST API for consumers of the cloud services. This is going to be a quick overview of kind of how we've layered the stack, just to give you a better idea of what's happening. Here on the, what you're seeing here on the left is how Azure is built today. We have the Azure Fabric. And then on top of the Azure Fabric, we have a set of cloud services that are running from our worker role, websites. That website, by the way, is not just, again, it's not a standalone Windows Server box running IIS, that is a web PaaS. It's a multi-machine, highly optimized web PaaS. It's that web PaaS. It's the IaaS experience for virtual machine roles or virtual machines. Service bus, SQL, caching, and numerous other services are lighting up. Right above that, you'll see the service management API. That is the consistent API where you access all your Azure services coming from the cloud. Then on top of that API is the self-service portal. that portal is stateless, and everything that happens in that portal goes through that self-service API. So that's the Azure stack. So let's take a look at how we're delivering this on-premise. First of all, it's built on Windows Server and System Center as the fabric for the on-premise and hosted clouds. That provides workload portability between Azure and on-premise. Then we take the service management API, and this is essential. We bring that API from Azure over so that we have a consistent view of how to consume stuff running on that fabric. Then we go ahead and bring that self-service portal over from Azure. We bring it over to run on the Windows Server private cloud hosted cloud stack. By the way, that's an adaptive UI, meaning that it only shows the set of services that a customer has access to. It is a white label solution and can be rebranded for the needs of a hosting service provider or an enterprise as well. We augment that with a provider portal. This is an additional portal that is used inside the firewall, inside the IT department, for how they manage the set of services that they make available to the consumer coming in the consumer portal. With that infrastructure in place, we then start flowing over select services from Azure to start building out the offering. So we bring that high-density website PaaS from Azure over to run on-premise. We basically bring continuity between the Azure model for virtual machines, and we have a consistent model for running on top of System Center, as well as SQL. We can actually talk to existing SQL Server deployments inside the enterprise and provide databases of service through the consumer portal, and then also provide service bus for a messaging framework. And then additional services to come. So this is how the two stacks line up between what we deliver in Azure and how we're delivering it as part of the Azure pack in conjunction with System Center and Windows Server. Ultimately, at the end goal is to have this consistent dev experience and customer experience, whether they're coming to Azure, consuming services within your data center, or going to a third-party service provider. One of the key points we want to make sure that really resonates with everyone is this entire experience is built on System Center and Windows Server. This is not like a fundamental restructuring of what you have deployed in your data centers today. It's an additive experience that builds on, and so it's an evolution of those technologies to support this kind of cloud-centric, consumer-centric view of resources in conjunction with the Azure pack. Ultimately, providing virtual machines, service management automation. Now, here's some very interesting things that don't pop right away in the first slides. I've talked about websites, I've talked about service bus and virtual machines and databases, but what I haven't talked about is automation. That service provider portal that I talked about earlier, it has some additional capabilities that are really tailored at the service operator, and you'll get some good demos of that this morning. But again, this is all based on those technologies that come with System Center, for virtual machine manager, service management automation, service operations manager, service provider foundation, and Windows Server, and Hyper-V. Okay, let's talk a little bit about service consumers. This really is kind of that part of that people-centric IT pillar. It's about making the cloud approachable to consumers to consume capacity as they need it, when they need it, based on the set of capacities and quotas that an organization is going to make available. Now, it's interesting, I say that, an organization is going to make available. In Azure, we have a utility-based billing solution. You get a subscription, it's all you can eat. You can consume as much as you want, we'll just send you a bill. Have fun. Now, dare I say, most IT organizations are not necessarily going to operate that way. They're not going to say, hey, come in, consume all you want, and we'll just do a chargeback model for your organization. One, they probably don't have the infrastructure built out to support that. So how do you control this? How do we bridge those two worlds between the all-you-can-eat world in Azure and how an IT organization wants to throttle access? We can actually define basically a set of quotas and constraints that a customer can operate within. So they have a set limit about the number of VMs, the amount of websites, the amount of capacity they consume, but they can provision and delete within that capacity, just not go beyond. So it is customizable. So service consumers are the people that come in to consume capacity on demand. They empower their operations. They want predictable costs. They want to know what they're going to get billed for. And this is even true in the enterprise. They want to know what their organization is going to be charged for the set of capacities they're getting. And they want to do it quickly. They want to optimize the turnaround time between need and actually having the resources available. Service providers. Well, that's us. That's Microsoft. That's our hosting service providers. That's the enterprise operators. We're the ones running the data center and powering the racks and making all the infrastructure available. We have a different set of items that we're interested in. One, we want to optimize on cost. We want to minimize the cost it takes us to run these services in our data center. We want to maximize our profitability per customer coming into the tenant portal. And you might say, wait a minute. I understand that for a hoster, but how does that relate to the enterprise? And I'm going to kind of just give an example of the website solution that we have. Now, you might think that high-density website hosting is really a hoster solution, not an enterprise solution. But let's talk now about the cost axis of this. If in the enterprise you have a bunch of websites that are running, whether they're broad, like an HR portal or a payroll or whatever that's going on in your portal, but you have a ton of websites. If every one of the websites deployed in your organization is running on a standalone VM, running Internet Information Server, you're actually tying up a lot of resources for basically a bunch of individual sites. That's expensive. That's costly. One of the things that you get here is the ability to deploy this web PaaS, still run those sites, but now in a much more optimized way, reducing your cost. So again, it's about maximizing the cost of delivering the services to each of your customers. You're interested in hardware efficiency, automating everything, and having differentiated SLAs. Hosters often want to have be able to charge for different kinds of SLAs for different customers. Even in the enterprise, I may have a workload that's mission critical. I'm going to run that on a set of dedicated hardware specific to that workload, but I might have other hardware that's allocated for dev test scenarios with a different SLA than the production deployments or mission critical applications. So there are different interests between the services consumers and the service providers. Again, just to recap, service consumers consume services. They're typically developers and IT pros. They want a self-service experience. Just because I'm a consumer doesn't mean I need everything done in advance. I want to go and do it on demand. They build and deploy applications, manage their applications, and pay for services. All right, now let's do a little bit of a deeper dive into each of these services. First, we'll look at this website that I've been alluding to and talking about in Azure. And the key thing I want to emphasize is that by building out this consistent cloud stack between how we run services in Azure and what we're delivering on-premise, it allows us to take the investments, not just the learnings, but the technology that we're building for Azure and making that available to our partners. This is a great example. We're bringing this website PaaS to it. Now, really, it's a high-density, highly scalable for web applications with great iteration for source code control, and I'll give you a demonstration of that. You get to manage your app with real-time telemetry. You can use the language of open source frameworks of your choice from .NET, Node.js, PHP, and Python, all integrated by default. Here's the nice thing. As an operator running the data center, I don't really have to know the details of how to set up each of these languages or frameworks. That web PaaS that comes in part of the Azure pack, when it installs, it supports all of this out of the box. That's all enabled and ready for you to make available to your customers, including the integration with different source code control solutions. As an example, this would be the tenant experience that can come in and provision a website. You'll notice this UI looks very similar to what they'll get if they go to Azure to get one of their website experiences. That full experience is made available as part of the Azure pack for deployment to our partners. Service bus. You know, this was one of the top requested services when we introduced this technology last year. By the way, this Azure pack had a very early release in preview form at the Worldwide Partner Conference last year. We released with System Center SP1 this January as an early release just to get it out there and start getting feedback on it. And one of the top requested services that we had from that audience was Service Bus. Why is Service Bus so important? When you're building these modern cloud applications, you're building applications that are designed to scale. designed to handle more load requests coming into their applications. As you build those types of applications, you're often dealing with handling a lot of requests coming into your system that need to be processed, often by back-end processors or legacy systems that might even be running on-premise or in a different data center. Well, how do you manage this fluctuation of incoming requests and your ability to process from a back-end? You need this kind of elastic message queuing system, and that's what Service Bus provides. It provides a reliable, guaranteed message delivery system. It supports the publisher-subscriber messaging patterns. It's standards-based. It supports REST, AMQP, and WS protocols. It's interoperable with .NET, Java, JMS, C, and C++. And it now has a full integrated experience through the management APIs into the portal, just as it would in Azure. So a developer building a modern cloud application for Azure will feel right at home building this application in your data center. As an example, this was the UI that's provided as part of it, their initial getting started experience on how to get tools, get documentation, get started, and managing the namespaces that they create for their applications. Now let's talk a little bit about virtual machines, and you'll get a great demo of this coming up from Mark. There's several things going on here. One is we want to make sure that you have a consistent container for how you run virtualized workloads in Azure and running those virtualized workloads on-premise. And we have that today with our VHDs and hypervisor. You have a consistent platform for running these VHDs. But we need more than that. We need, how do I get access to managing my VMs? How do I remote into them? How do I manage and scale them and work with them as a resource from a consumer point of view? So we wanted to make sure we had a consistent IaaS experience from Microsoft to all the customers of IaaS that make that available. So that's a user experience and an API, because with IaaS, it's also important to have a consistent automation model where you can automate and provision VMs, whether you're doing them in Azure on-premise. And then we're introducing a brand new feature called the virtual machine roles. This is a very, very powerful model of virtual machines. It's a separation of the container and the application, such that you can have a deployable application that will deploy the container, the application and its configuration in the container, and allow you then to scale the application, where you can grow it elastically to handle more demand, and also shrink it when demand is not as great. So you can kind of control the cost of running that application. Much like with our website PaaS, where you can scale a website for increased capacity and scale it down, we now have that for virtual machines. And it supports Windows and Linux as well. And a lot of great networking support has also been added in. One of the big features we have in Azure today is this idea to do Azure Connect, where as an enterprise, I can go up to Azure and I can create a connection, a bridge, or a gateway between my Azure network for my VMs and my on-premise network. And I can extend that on-premise network into Azure. That capability is also built now into this stack for deployment to our hosting service providers and enterprises alike, such that from the self-service portal, a consumer can actually extend their on-premise network into that data center to connect with their VMs running on that, that network. Site-to-site connectivity. And again, you'll see a consistent user experience for managing VMs, whether they come from Azure or come from your on-premise cloud deployment. Now, in addition to those key workloads, there are some other things that we've added that are very important in this release. I mentioned earlier that we did kind of our initial release in January with System Center SP1. And one of the limitations in that release was that it was really focused at hosting service providers and not necessarily the enterprise. Now, why would we do that? This is very interesting technology for enterprises and hosters alike. Matter of fact, we were actually quite surprised. Based on that release that we did in January, we had a number of enterprises that have already gone out and deployed the technology inside their data centers and are using it right now, and have actually come by the booth here at TechEd to give us updates on what's going on and trying to find out what's new. But the reason we didn't promote this as an enterprise-ready solution in January was it was missing one critical capability, AD integration. I can't imagine this technology being used in the enterprise without AD, but it's so compelling to have this self-service, this agile model for consuming resources, that we had some early adopters that were just willing to go there anyways, just to provide that level of capability. Well, now they can do it without sacrifice, because we actually do have full AD integration. So we integrate with AD for on-premise, for bringing your identities into the cloud, just like you would in Azure. In Azure, you can bring org ID into Azure, so you can log in with your corporate identities in Azure. We have that capability here. We also support ADFS Federation and co-administrators, similar to what we do in Azure, so you can have multiple people working on the same subscription. Now, one of the things I kind of you'll start to get a view of when we separate consumers and providers, there's a model here, a model for acquiring capacity. And that model is kind of predicated on this idea of having a subscription to resources. And that subscription can cover VMs, websites, service bus, databases, whatever. It's basically who is the responsible party for the set of resources that are being consumed on this offer type. And you'll get a great demo of offers and plans coming up here from John. But that represents the set of capacity that can be consumed. In Azure, that's an Azure subscription. Now in Azure, you can have a co-administrator, which means I can acquire a subscription, I'm the responsible party, I'm the person that's gonna get the bill, but I also wanna work with Mark. Mark's gonna come on and he's gonna work on those same resources that I am getting billed for, but we're a team, so I want him to contribute to my development project, my application. So in Azure, we do that through co-administration. Well, we have the same model as part of the Azure Pack for working with System Center, in that as a consumer of an on-premise set of capacity, I can have a co-administrator. So Mark and I can still collaborate on the set of resources we're getting from our IT organization or from a third-party hosting service provider. But there's one additional capability that we built in just for this release, just for the enterprise. And for the enterprise, there's another scenario that's very important, and that is, teams aren't always small. They can be pretty large. And the membership in that team can be fairly dynamic. It can be changing in real time as people come and go or reassign between projects. And so what would be really nice if you could say, I want my co-administrator to be this 80 group. And anybody in that 80 group can have access to this subscription. And that's the capability that we've integrated into this identity solution for our release. So that now in the enterprise, I can have my dev team assigned as a co-administrator, my test team assigned, and then once they're assigned onto that subscription and that offer and plan for that project, I never have to touch it again. I'll just, as the membership changes and is managed in AD, the access will flow right through the experience. We also do integration with SQL Server and MySQL for providing database on demand. And one of the neat things we've added in this release is the way we do database as a service, it's not SQL Azure, so I want to make it clear, this is not SQL Azure. Our on-premise SQL solution is SQL Server, so this is using the SQL Server that you know and love today. And you can set it up for clustering and however you want to set up SQL Server. But one of the things we've made sure that we enable as part of this release is making sure that as an IT organization that you can offer your customers coming in SQL Always On. So as they provision databases, they can be replicated across an availability group in SQL Server, so you have that consistent database connectivity, and you're not dedicated to a single SQL, or have a single failure point of an individual SQL Server instance. So that's another very compelling feature in this release. There's a value-added gallery of services that you as an operator can curate and define which applications are available to your customers. And everything that we're going to show, you have programmatic access to either through the REST APIs, through PowerShell, but everything that you're going to see can be fully automated. Okay. Enough of the slideshows. Let's take a look at this in action. I'll find the right switch here. There we go. Okay. You've heard us talk about consistency, this one cloud OS, this level of continuity that we want our customers to have, your customers, our customers of cloud OS, regardless of where they get access to it. So let's take a look at what that looks like with this release. I'm going to start by showing you an experience in Windows Azure as just kind of a baseline. Let's take a look at what a scenario looks like there, and then I'm going to take a look at what that same capability looks like as part of the Azure Pack and Windows Server and System Center. So first, let me log into Azure. Now, when I'm logging into Azure, you'll notice, wait a minute, that's not the Azure sign-up page. Well, Azure supports organizational IDs. So I can log into Azure with my Microsoft corporate credentials. So here, this is actually the ADFS node that Microsoft hosts for employee access to corporate resources. So when I log into my HR site remotely, this is the login page I go through. When I connect to Azure with my corporate identities, this is the same login page I go to. So this is the login page for Microsoft employees when we go to access resources. So I'm going to log in through our MSIT corporate login page to get access to Azure. So I'm going to provide my corporate credentials here. And now I'm going to go ahead and log into Azure. So this is really separating off from the set of services that I have. So I've logged in, I've been authenticated against the Microsoft corporate AD, and now I'm flowing into the Windows Azure management portal for an experience to consume and manage resources up there. And you'll notice at the top right up here, you'll see that it says bradleyb@microsoft.com. So let's go into websites. This is, again, that high-density website PaaS. I'm going to create a new site here. I'm just quickly create, I'll call it Tech Ed Store. Okay, we'll go ahead and create that site. Now, what this is doing, this isn't spinning up a new VM and turning on IIS and doing that. What it's doing is going out to that web PaaS that I talked about and saying, hey, as a platform, provision a new tenant on that platform. So it's not spinning up new physical resources in the data center or virtual resources. It's a logical construct on the PaaS. Give me a website up there. As a matter of fact, you'll notice it's already there, done, and ready. So I'll go to my Tech Ed store. And I have a number of options I can do in the store, one of which is enable source code control, because Mark and I want to collaborate on the same project. So I want to basically set it up for source code control so that we can collaborate and interact with this, so I'll do it. There are a number of source code control options I can set up for my application in Azure, one of which is Git. Git is very popular, and one of the things we've been surprised about is the number of enterprises even using Git for collaboration on their dev teams. But anyway, this is in Azure. We support it. We support a number of other source code control systems from GitHub, Dropbox, and numerous others. So I'm going to go ahead and set this up. Okay. Once that's completed, what it's done is gone ahead and created a Git repository for my site in Azure. So that site that I just created has a dedicated Git repository in Azure that I can collaborate with, and it provisioned a publishing URL, a Git publishing URL, for that site. So I'm going to copy that URL. Now, on my local box here, I have a Git enlistment. This is a Git project that I cloned from GitHub. And I want to stress here, this isn't like a modified version of Git. This isn't an Azure version. This is the standard open source Git system that anybody can download for Linux or Windows, doesn't matter. And it's a cloned project from GitHub. What I want to do is add the connection to the Azure-created Git repository for my site. So I'm going to do Git, remote, add, Azure, and I'll just paste in that URL and hit enter. That's added the connection. And now I want to publish the application from my local disk up into Azure. So let's go ahead and do that. So what I'm doing is saying push it up to that connection I just registered called Azure and push the tip of my enlistment or master. I type that in. It's now going to prompt me for my publishing credentials. I supply that. That is not. One of the things that the website allows you to do is set up unique publishing credentials for the sites that you provision that you can share across your team or use individually, but it's publishing credentials specific to that website PaaS running in Azure. Okay? So I'm now publishing with those credentials. Notice a couple of things. Git is now packaging and publishing it up there. Notice that Azure is recognizing that the publishing action has occurred. And it's recognizing the push is going on. It's processing those transactions and making that all happen up there in the cloud. And it should be done momentarily here and is now done. We should see Azure recognize that it's been completed. The deployment has now successfully completed up to Azure. I can go up here, and I can even look at my deployment history. I can see the transactions that have occurred. And so over time, I have a complete versioning log. All of this, I want to stress, is built into that web PaaS. You as an IT operator or service provider didn't have to go set this all up, figure it all out. When you deploy the Azure pack and deploy that web PaaS, all of that is built in. Okay. So we've just seen that deployment happen. I'm going to switch real quickly. Let's verify that the website did, in fact, launch. I'm just going to launch the website itself. So here's the site URL. Okay, that is, in fact, the site I pushed up from my local disk. That's great. Okay, now so far, nothing really special has happened. You could do this with FTP or a number of ways. So what? We pushed up a website up to a web host. La-di-da. What's the big deal? This is a cloud platform. It has some additional capabilities besides just serving up your site and having publishing protocols like Git or FTP. And that, what makes it a cloud? What makes it a cloud is my ability to scale. I'm going to jump right over here to a tab that we have in Azure called Scaling. Now, when I go to Scale, I have a number of options I can choose. You'll notice there's this web mode, which is really different SLAs, whether I'm kind of running in kind of a free commodity shared SLA with not much of a guarantee, or kind of more of a premium shared model that we call shared, or reserved. These are slightly different concepts, but I can toggle between these modes, and that's part of the PaaS. As an operator, again, you don't have to set this up. It comes with the platform. I can go ahead and say, hey, I want to run in a shared mode, but when I run in that shared mode, I don't want to be at one instance. I'm having a sale this weekend. I know I'm expecting a lot of load. I want to bump this up. So I want to bump it up to a whole bunch of sites. I'm going to kick it up to 4 instances. I hit save. Instantaneously, my site is now sprayed across 4 nodes that are capable of processing my site. And that's part of the PaaS. That capability is there. I have the capacity automatically. And I can even move from being in a shared into a reserved. What does reserved really mean? So in the shared mode, we're running multiple customers on basically the same compute tier, where basically I can have 2 different customers running in. There's still an isolation boundary between those customers, but they're kind of consuming or running in the same workload. In reserve, you as a customer will get a dedicated workload just to your family of web applications. It doesn't mean each application is getting its own basically virtual node. It's all your applications are going on there, but you're the only customer that's going to be on that reserved instance. So these are varying degrees of an SLA across that, and each of which can scale. And this is what makes it a cloud. Now, what I've just shown you is Azure. This is how we run our high-density web PaaS in Azure as a business that we drive. We charge more for reserve than we do for the shared. So it represents a price point. This is interesting to hosters, but even an enterprise reserve has value where you may not want to mix certain kinds of workloads on the same kind of compute tier. You want that level of isolation, and you want to have scaling elasticity. All right. Let's take a look at this identical scenario, but now instead of going against Azure, let's take a look at what it might look like as part of the Azure pack with Windows Server and System Center in your data center. So now I'm going to log in, and we call it the Contoso tenant. So this is like a mock deployment of the pack for a business called Contoso, or an enterprise called Contoso. Now, there are a number of configuration options you have the way you can set this up. And I'm kind of illustrating this here. When you log in through our login system, we actually have an internal use of ADFS for integration with AD. And we support a variety of different ways to set up the authentication model, one of which is to go directly against Active Directory locally, which you can do. One is to use traditional hosting style accounts such as ASP membership or where you have just email and a password kind of accounts. And another is, in this case, we've set this portal up to actually authenticate against the Microsoft IT ADFS node so I can log in as a corporate customer of Contoso. So I'm going to log in through the Microsoft Active Directory. What you'll notice is, hey, that's the same login page I just used to log into Azure. But now I'm not logging into Azure, I'm going to log into Contoso. The nice thing is here, nothing different had to be implemented from Microsoft's standpoint. It's the Microsoft login portal that I'm going to log in through, so I'm going to get authenticated there. Okay, now I've been authenticated against the corporate AD system, and now I'm logging into Contoso instead of Azure. And so now I'm going to get a tailored experience with a set of resources and services that Contoso has made available to me as a consumer. So you'll notice here I have websites, I have virtual machines and networking and service bus and SQL, all available to me to use as a consumer. Now, if Contoso didn't want me to have access to all those resources, I wouldn't, and they wouldn't show up. So this is an adaptive UI. If Contoso had other custom resources available running in their data center, those could show up. So this is tailored. It is a white label solution, so if Contoso wanted to, they could completely rebrand this and give it a completely different look and feel. Now in this case, let's go through that same scenario that I just demonstrated in Azure. I'm going to create a new website. I'll name it the same thing, Tech Ed Store. We'll go ahead and provision it. Now again, just like it was in Azure, it's not having to go spin up a VM. This is provisioning one of those tenants on the PaaS. So it's a very quick operation. It's already done and they're running. I can hit it, and you'll notice here I'm getting the same type of experience that we had in Azure. I can set it up and manage it a number of ways, one of which is to set up source code control, just like we did in Azure. I'm going to go ahead and set that up. Notice that it also has support for a variety of source code control solutions. I'm going to go ahead and set up a Git repository just like I did in Azure. And so now it's going to provision a Git repository on the back end running at Contoso for the site that I just created. It comes back. So far, me as a web developer, I'm not having a different experience. It doesn't matter to me whether I was going to Azure or going to my IT department or going to a hosting service provider. I'm getting consistent experience. I know how this system works. I know how to interact with it. I'm going to go take that publishing endpoint that I just got from Contoso. I'm going to go to that enlistment. Now, I want to, this is very subtle here. This is the same enlistment, the same application that I just published up to Azure, unchanged. I'm not changing any source code here. I'm not doing anything differently, except I want to add my Contoso connection there. So I'm going to do Git remote add Contoso, and I'm going to put in that publishing endpoint, just like I did with Azure. Now I'm going to do Git push Contoso master. So far, the process is identical. I'm getting prompted for my publishing credentials, just like I would have in Azure. I'm going to provide those here. And kick the process off. And you'll notice that the Windows Azure pack running on System Center and Windows Server is responding in very much the same way as it would in Azure. It's recognizing the deployment is happening. The deployment is being packaged up by Git. Again, I want to specify, this is the standard open source Git tools that you would use for deploying against other systems, working against the Contoso just like it did against Azure. Okay, it is now done. It's responded. So just like I could in Azure, I can go up here and I can go look at my versioning history. It's all the same. I can go and do it. Let's just go verify that I can access the site just like I did. I'm going to hit the URL. Same site that I just created and published to Azure is now working here on this platform. And again, what makes this really impressive is the fact that it's a cloud platform. I can scale that application. Let's see if that remains true. So just like I could in Azure, as a consumer of Cloud OS coming to Contoso, I can scale my application. I can pick different SLAs. Now, as a service provider, you can define what the individual SLA is for each of these modes, whether it's the intro mode, the basic shared mode, or reserved. I can go ahead and pick one of those, just like I did in Azure, and I can scale my application. Now, here's some things that are a little bit different. Because Azure is all you can eat, you can scale as much as you want. Here, it might be a little scary. You might say, hey, I don't want customers just coming in and scale everything to 100 nodes running in my data center if they don't need it. You as an operator can actually define how far they can scale as part of their offer. I might have for a dev test scenario, I say, look, you guys can only scale to 3 nodes. I know you need to test a little elasticity. That's fine. But for production or a public-facing experience, I'm going to design it so it can scale out to 20 nodes if needed, or whatever the need is. So that's configurable, and they will only be able to scale to the quotas and constraints that you define as an operator and make available to your tenants. Okay, now, what you've just seen is a very consistent experience between Windows Azure and the Azure Pack running with Windows Server and System Center. And so that's what we're striving to achieve in our CloudOS vision, that consistency between Azure and what you can deliver to your customers inside your data center, inside your private network. Now I want to show one thing I talked about earlier was this idea of co-administrators. I'm going to go ahead and log out. You just saw me create this Tech Ed store. Notice that I don't have any virtual machines. I have just this store. I could have done service bus or databases or anything else, just like I would in Azure, but I didn't. I'm going to now log out of my experience. And now I'm going to ask Mark to come in and log into the portal. And what you're going to see, Mark is a co-admin. So on his account, when he logs in, he should see everything that he normally has access to, but he should also see the set of resources that I created on my subscription when he logs in. So Mark's going to log in now, and then he's going to continue with the demo, going through some IaaS and other experiences, but I want you to just notice that as a co-administrator, he'll have access to the site that I just created.
Okay.
So now he's logging in.
All right.
And there's the Tech Ed store that I just created on my account. So as a co-administrator, he had it. So Mark, yep. It's all yours.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. So I've logged in with my account, and you can see up here on the right that has my information on it. It's a little bit easier to see like that way. So what I want to talk about is infrastructure as a service and how you can offer VMs from the Windows Azure Pack and System Center. So I'm logged into my account. You can see that there are a different sets of VMs. So we have standalone VMs, which were created from VM templates, which is the standard way of doing VMs in Virtual Machine Manager and System Center. So we retain that capability in the Windows Azure Pack. But what I want to share or spend a lot of time on today is talking about a new kind of Virtual Machine object that is available now, or will be coming available in the Windows Azure Pack and System Center, and that's the virtual machine role. So Brad had shown an example of where we developed a service from websites where it was running on Azure, then we brought it on-premise. And this is something that we're starting on-premise, where you have a scalable tier of virtual machines. So I'm going to start out by seeing what it looks like to create one of these. So I can click New, Virtual Machine Role from Gallery. And now you see a set of templates that have been made available to me by my administrator. So this is a list that is crafted to my subscription. Other users, when they log in, they would see a different list potentially. It depends on what the admin chooses to do. Another aspect to this is that these templates can be used in any installation of Windows Azure Pack and System Center so that they can be portable across the enterprise, hoster, and all I have to do is select one of the gallery items here, click Next, and then give a name for it. And then you see here that there are multiple versions available to me as a user. And I can also pick which subscription to create it under. So in this case, I'll just stick with 1.0. I'll click Next. And now you see a set of virtual machine settings. So in these virtual machine role templates, there are kind of two pieces. One piece is the virtual machine piece, which creates a container to then install applications into. The second piece of the virtual machine role template is about applications and actually taking a payload and installing it inside of the virtual machine. Okay? So down in here, you can see that there's a, this is a scalable tier, and my template says that I can create between 1 and 5 VMs. So in this case, I can say create 2. Down here, you can see that there are a set of sizes, and you might recognize these values because these are the same values, some of the same values we use in Azure. So we extra small, small, large. Unlike Azure, however, this comes with a set of out-of-the-box settings for number of cores and memory, but these are configurable within Virtual Machine Manager, so you can change these settings to whatever you want to offer as an admin. Down here as well, you see that there is an image, an OS VHD that I'm going to use to create this VM. So unlike Virtual Machine Manager in the past, we're in kind of the core system is more like what we use in Azure. It's an OS VHD. One key piece aspect of this template is that this does loose binding to the VHD. So you can tag VHDs in VMM, have a template running from the Windows Azure Pack, and it queries VMM and sees VHDs that suit its needs. And that's very valuable because now you can take that template and ship it in different systems and look for VHDs with those tags across those different systems. Okay, so that makes it much more portable of an artifact. So there's a few more settings here I'm going to fill out. I'm going to pick a network. Username. Click next. And you see here now there's a set of website settings, so I can pick a IIS site name. Pick my app pool. And then set the port on the website. And if I click next, that will go and create a virtual machine role. It would take a few minutes to deploy that virtual machine role, so in the interest of time, I'll go to one that's already been created. So down here, I have one called FinWeb Portal, so I can click on that one. And you see, first of all, you get a introductory screen that gives you some information about some tools that might be available. If I click on Dashboard, you see something interesting down here. Okay. So here I have how much this virtual machine role is using. That's the green bar. I have how much other capacity I'm using in all across all the VMs in my role. And then on the right, you can see the limits that my administrator has placed on me on my subscription. So I can create up to 20 VMs, and I can use up to 20 cores or something. Okay. Down here, there's a list of devices. Right. If I go over here, you can see that I've created 2 virtual machines instances. So if I click into there, I get information about that virtual machine, like its IP address, how much it's using, and devices and things like that. You also see down here at the bottom that there's a number of controls, so the standard start-stop control VM thing, connect to a VM. Here, just like with websites, I have the ability to elastically scale up or down this virtual machine tier. So I can simply move the slider bar over, click save, and I'll go and start provisioning another 2 VMs without having to do anything else. And they'll have the same configuration as the 2 that are already there. And finally, my settings are captured here in the configure tab. So the things that I put into the actually went through the wizard, they're actually captured. And what I can do is simply do something like this and change the size from small to extra small. Hit save, and it'll go and increase the size of the VM. There's one more thing I wanted to point out about this guy, and that's that since I have more than one version, I now can see that there's an update available. There's a new version that's available to me. And all I have to do is click this update button, And it pops open the wizard, and I can select the new version and then start filling out the wizard again and upgrade to the next version. Virtual Machine Manager is very smart in doing so, and it does this without harming your VMs, so these VMs are actually persistent. So unlike other systems that have the non-persistent VMs, it'll actually leave your data in place. You don't have to create a new instance from scratch. It's just going to upgrade to the new version. Okay, so that's the virtual machine role. So next, what I want to show is that we have the ability to do virtual networks. Okay? So I can click on virtual network, custom create. Now you see that I have the ability as a tenant to create my own network that I can use with my virtual machines. So I'll just type in a name here. You're going to pick a subscription. I can now specify information about the DNS servers. And if this network were to be used at a service provider, I can now create a site-to-site VPN connection from the hoster's VPN endpoint to my enterprise's VPN endpoint. So I'll just show you what that looks like. So I can click the button for configure a site-to-site VPN connection. There's some other capabilities as well, like BGP, but I'll skip that for now. Take the default on the gateway subnet. Here, if I would like, I can bring my own IP address space for my application. Something like that. And I bring an address space without having to reconfigure my application. And here I can just specify a name for my company's VPN endpoint. And the last thing I have to do is provide the address space that I want routed from the hoster network back to my my VPN endpoint at my company. And that's all I have to do. If I click this box, then it goes and creates a VM network. Again, in the interest of time, I'll skip that. So you've seen capabilities around compute and network as a tenant now. I can create a VM, I can connect to my VM. But sometimes, especially when my VM is running in a remote site, whether it's a hoster or some other network inside of my company, and there's a break in between, might have a problem getting to my VM. So if it was all running in my data center with where I'm an admin, I can get access to the host, I can do VM connect, and get to that machine over the intranet with my company's corporate credentials. But if the host is running at a service provider or running in a remote network in my company, I won't be able to do that. And a lot of the service providers don't like to have their hosts exposed directly to the internet. Okay? So that created a problem. And so we heard this feedback, and now we've added a capability with inside of this portal to be able to connect to these VMs. So I have here a Linux box, and if you go down here to dashboard, previously there was an ability to connect via the remote desktop, but in this case it doesn't support that. So now I have the ability to use a new capability using a console connect. Now if I click on this, you see that it's actually using remote desktop protocol, even though it's not connecting to the guest OS. So there's a new capability that we're exposing in this portal now. So I can click the box, I mean click the check mark, download an RDP file that's a very temporary, it has a temporary token associated with it. So I'll time out after a few minutes. And you can see now I just click that and I'm in to this Linux server, right, running SUSE. Okay? Now, that's one capability, but to make it very clear, I want to show you a machine, a VM that I have running. Down here, you can see that it doesn't have an operating system, and over here, if I go to configure, it doesn't have a network attached to it. So this is completely isolated outside of being able to get to it from the host. So if I go back to dashboard and click connect console, download the RDP file again. And now you have a server that doesn't have an OS or a network, and I can still provision it as a tenant. So that, as you can imagine, as a provider, could eliminate a lot of service support calls and let bring the power to your users. So I can get in here and try something, but change some things in there. So I'm going to go and set up the OS, whatever. So you can see now we have a powerful set of new capabilities being offered to the Windows Azure Pack for infrastructure as a service.
Thank you, Mark.
Yep.
Let's give him a hand. Oh, let me switch my slides. Switch is not happening. There we go. All right, I want to thank Mark and Bradley. They are truly gifts that keep talking and talking and talking. I have 15 minutes to do the service provider aspect of what we're showing today. And I'm going to really speed it up because we have a couple of demos that we want to get to real fast. Bradley went over this in the first part of the presentation, but the service provider is the administrative function that provides the cloud services for which you saw tenants consuming those services in the previous sets of demos. These are both for hosters as well as enterprises that have IT departments that want to provide services to their internal business units as well. And what are the kinds of things they do? They deploy shared resources, they create offers for their customers, they manage the users. They want to have high degrees of cost efficiency, and they have to be able to charge for their services. So in that light, in the service provider landscape of things that they have to do, the first is all about subscriptions, user management, as well as, you know, creating the offers that the tenants are going to consume for various plans that they are subscribed to. And to that end, we have a demo where John Ballard is going to show us all the aspects of what you need to do for user management and plan management.
Thank you again.
Go ahead. I'm going to come back to the other stuff.
Mike? Mike 4.
Hello?
Got me up there. Okay, there we go. Thanks, Nagender. All right, so very quickly, I'm going to give you an introduction to this service provider experience. As Brad mentioned, when we bring the part of the cloud OS into the service provider environment, whether that's an enterprise or a hosting provider, we have to build a portal for them to manage the users and the offers and such. And just to kind of set that context for you a little more, I'm going to propose that as a service administrator who's in this role, I really care about four things, and it's really managing my users, attracting and retaining tenants because I make money that way. I use offers to do that, but I construct offers for other things too. I might actually think about offers that I put together as a way to manage my profit margin. I can give some stuff away, I can charge a lot for other high value stuff, and in the mix that I create there, I can manage my profit. I also care about capacity and usage, and in fact, we're going to do a really quick demo after me that's going to give you a teaser of what we can do in the usage and analysis space around how this environment's being consumed. And then finally, efficiency. I need to be able to do a bunch of things in an efficient manner because if I'm a successful hosting or service provider, I want to be wildly outnumbered by the number of tenants that I have. So I have to be able to be as efficient as possible. So let's see if I can get this going here. I'll tell you what, let's just do, is that one, yeah?
Sorry, hang on a second. That's not it. There we go. Is that it? Yeah, okay. Administrator. I log in. And the portal, as you can see, looks somewhat different than what you saw with Brad and Mark. In the case of those tenant experiences, what they could see was constrained by the subscription in which they operate. Brad referred to it a couple times as an adaptive UI. In the case of the service provider, I need to see everything because I'm managing this complex environment with lots of different services associated with it. I'm going to kind of quickly take you through those four points that I talked about in very rapid sequence here because we want to leave just a little bit of time at the end there, starting with how I manage user accounts. And I'll go in here and I will find the account that we had for Brad. Let's see, where's the Brad account? Actually, I could do it with the Mark account too, because as you saw, those guys are co-administrators on the same subscription. So I can take a look at Mark's account here. And you can see that I can manage the subscriptions in much the way I can the entire account. I can suspend or pause or delete things. Essentially, this is how I manage users. Good users get rewards from me, and I give them things. Bad users get stuff taken away, and that's kind of at the high level. That's what I'm doing here. You can see that in the context of any individual subscription, I can go in and I can see a little bit about the usage of that subscription, which gives me some information for how they're behaving as a tenant. Maybe just most importantly, it also lets me make sure that I give them plenty of capacity so they don't have a bad experience. And you can see here, this is the way I can add additional administrators. And as Brad mentioned, if I wanted to, it would be easiest to then go and put groups in here so that I don't actually have to spend a lot of time here, and I use Active Directory for membership in this, what amounts to a team project. So that's how I manage users. The next thing I want to do is create plans. And plans are essentially just what we label the container of offers, and it's very similar to a cell phone plan for however you might think of the things that you buy from any service provider. And in this case, the plan contains any of the service types that you see along the list, websites, virtual machine clouds, and so on. Plans themselves are relatively straightforward, and I won't create a new one for the interest of time. I'll just drill in and show you this plan that was being consumed in the demos you saw a minute ago, this plan we call Platinum. And a plan at the highest level has a dashboard and some basic information about the plan itself. The dashboard's useful to know how the plan's being consumed. One of the things that I think is kind of particularly useful about this information is subscriptions. If I put out a new offer and I don't get a single subscription on that thing over the course of a week, I might want to second guess what I put in there because it's obviously not attractive to people.
So, John, this is a plan that contains websites, virtual machines, and SQL.
That's correct. These, what you see right here, are the three different resource types that have been included in this plan. And I'll take a look at the virtual machine clouds plan, portion of the plan just so you can get a sense for how this is configured. When you create a VM clouds resource inclusion in a plan, one of the things you have to do is anchor that to a VMM server, because if you'll remember, this is all powered by System Center. And then you have to be specific about the cloud that you select. And then, as Brad mentioned earlier, there's a lot of things you need to do around quotas, because in the case of something like public Azure, unlimited is fairly normal, and we want you to consume as much as you can consume. In this particular case, you can imagine where the administrator might want to be more constrained about what they make available. And then the other things that are in here are networks and then some more of the traditional concepts from System Center, like hardware profiles and templates, but most importantly, this Azure consistent gallery that I can manage over time. And this is how Mark showed you what those are used for. This is how I decide what gallery items get included in this plan. And you could kind of think of that as an ongoing task of the administrator related to how I manage offers. Part of managing offers is not just packaging them up and making them available, but it's also making sure I'm continually bringing in new gallery items that keep my library rich and vibrant. So that's how offers work.
When Mark was showing us that you could change the instance count mm-hmm. for a particular gallery item, that's something that you as an administrator would configure here as a part of the plan that he subscribed to.
Yeah,
is that right?
That's correct. It's constrained essentially by the quota system I showed you where I would set that up. Now, when you're on the topic of capacity and usage, when you're in the portal experience, what you'll see is kind of a consistent feel across these different nodes. Anytime you put in a resource provider into this environment, what you see here are all the out-of-box resource providers, but you could completely imagine some third-party items showing up here as well. Any resource is responsible for bringing in administrative experience with it. And one of the kind of consistent things we like to do is a display of the clouds in some fashion. So you click on, for example, Service Bus clouds here, and you see the different clouds I have defined. In this case, only one. If you go to the website clouds, you see the list of clouds, and you can drill into these too. Each cloud has its own set of configuration options you can perform on it, as well as, again, basic usage data. The important thing about usage, as we show it here, is that I can get a sense for what's being adopted and how much so that I can place the next plan that I create in an environment that's, again, got the capacity to handle it. And of course, there's lots of different things you can do to configure any given cloud item. I want to round out the thing, and I'm going to have my colleague Srikanth come up and do a little more deep dive on usage, but I wanted to now finish with a quick point about efficiency. One of the things that we've wired up here, as Brad mentioned earlier, is automation for the service provider, and you see that down here. I'm not going to go deep into automation right now. What I would like you all to at least do, if you can, is come to the session this afternoon at 3:15. It's a B362 is the session code, and we're going to spend an entire hour just on this portal and the administrative experiences, including automation.
Well, one of the things with respect to automation is that you want the service administrator to be as efficient as possible and automate as much tasks as they can do in their provider infrastructure. So we've cloud-enabled our System Center Orchestrator engine to be PowerShell workflow-based, and you can have PowerShell workflows that define the automations that you need, and you'll find more details about that in the automation session.
Thanks, John. Good. Thanks, Nagender. So I'll try to be brief. As you can see, the system is going to generate lots and lots of data. One set of data is going to be generated by the tenants as they start consuming the resources. The other set of data is going to be generated by the stack in order to support these services. Now, if you pause here for a second, you'll ask me, okay, why do I really care about the fact there's so much data being generated? The short answer to this, pay as you go, and pay for only for what you use, is the basis for cloud. Cloud business model's foundation is based on the fact that this is the consuming for what you pay for only what you consume. In order to do that, there's going to be a lot of, if the stack doesn't provide you the kind of capability, it's going to be a lot of hard work. So what we do out of the box is provide you, number one, a consistent API, a REST JSON-based API that provides all the usage data for all the tenant subscriptions into a single consistent interface. Number one, that's the most important thing. Think of this as a Twitter feed of all the fire hose that we turn on you, so we provide you that consistent experience. Number two, the cloud consumption throws a little bit of challenge for the hosters and the providers because it's elastic and it makes it very difficult for the capacity planning. So, and this requires analytics. So out of the box, we provide analytical capability both at the macro level and at the micro level. And in the next couple of minutes, I'll just show you exactly that. So what you see on the screen here is the VM hours across your data centers, of course, all your VMs, counted in a 15-minute increment and rounded up by the hour and it's shown up. So we continuously aggregate this data, create OLAPS cubes about that, and then present it to you. So you can actually have the drill down features as well. So for a second right now, it's about 500 total hours. If I can go refresh this, you should, because I have a bunch of VMs that these guys all provisioned, they're all constantly generating load, and you can actually see the data refresh, and it's given to you. Now, if you're a provider watching your top line, this is a very good indicator in terms of how you're doing this quarter. You can also go back and say, okay, I know what my top line is. I can find out who are the primary So if I can actually go do this, you can actually see that this capacity, the consumption, there are a few subscriptions that are actually contributing more to that. And you can actually go continue to drill down and then say, okay, let me go and find out a little bit more. And I can find out what the hourly trends are or the monthly trends. It doesn't matter. Then I can actually say how do they trend up? So we provide this capability out of the box, not just for VM hours, across all compute metrics, network, disk I/O, memory, CPU cores, and correlate them with subscriptions. So it doesn't end there. So this is this kind of capabilities. Also, if you don't have performance point, that's fine. We have Excel expressing the same amount of data with a little bit more analytics. And I can see the 642 should probably refresh back with the current date with more data. So it now allows you to take the same set of data and start giving more analytics. You can actually start understanding your customers, how the usage patterns are, and start continue to go back and target them to see either plan upgrades or a better SLA with them. Okay? So with that, I'm going to leave you three things. Number one, out of the box, we provide a REST API that actually continues to give you a consistent usage information across all your tenants. When you expect that somebody to actually go build an adapter to tie to your billing system, that's number one. Number two, out-of-the-box analytics on VM consumption. We expect you to actually, we provide all the analytics, we can actually expand on that to actually go back and look at what your trends are and then adjust your business according to that. So with that, I'm going to just leave to Nagender. So thank you, Nagender.
Thank you.
Is your mic okay?
Yeah, can you hear me? I need this mic back on, yeah. So I'm just going to wrap up. I just have a couple of minutes. I just want to close with saying, you know, we've invested a lot into making sure that the administration infrastructure for hosters, as well as enterprises that behave like hosters for their internal usage, for their internal customers, is built on a very mature stack built from Windows Server, System Center, as well as the Windows Azure pack. And we put together a whole range of scenarios, some of those that you've seen today, both for the tenants, the users, the cloud, the consumers of those services, and for the service provider that is managing, maintaining, monitoring, doing upsells, et cetera. And it's all built on top of this familiar stack with all these components. Here are key takeaways, and I just went over all of those just now. So thank you very much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it. And please fill out the evaluations when you get time. Thank you.